This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And welcome to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins. Tony's the president of the Family Research Council. I'm the producer of this program, 30-year media veteran, been at this a long time, and it's a great honor to be with you here today on this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. Well, earlier today, Congressman Steve Scalise made his first appearance before Congress. Scalise is the House Republican whip who was shot in June at the congressional baseball team practice, and he says he's a living example that miracles really do happen. We're going to talk with Ohio Congressman Warren Davidson. He'll join us with his thoughts on his return, and he'll also help us unpack the details on the new tax reform proposal. And then Ramesh Panaru, with National Review, will weigh in on this discussion as well. And our friend Dr. Alveda King, she'll be here to discuss her speaking engagement at the upcoming Values Voter Summit, and she's also going to chime in on the NFL controversy as well as the 40 Days of Life. And then a big event in D.C. next week, Awaken the Dawn. We'll talk with the event's founder, David Bradshaw. There'll be folks from every state in the union with tents set up on the lawn there in Washington, D.C., and that should be a great, great event. But before we talk about tax reform, I want to remind you about the upcoming Values Voter Summit, October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C., sponsored by the Family Research Council. This is the annual go-to event for those with conservative and biblical values. You'll hear from leading newsmakers and lawmakers in the nation. It will help you speak persuasively to your community and legislators to spread the support of your values. For more information, go to valuesvotersummit.org. Well, as I mentioned earlier, a very emotional day in Washington, D.C. We got to see Congressman Scalise for the first time since he's been shot at that baseball practice, Republican baseball team practice that we all remember so well. Let's listen to these impassioned words.
Jennifer and I have been overwhelmed with all of that outpouring, and it's given us the strength to get through all of this and to get to this point today. And it starts with God. When I was laying out on that ball field, the first thing I did once I was down and I couldn't move anymore is I just started to pray. And I will tell you, it gave me an unbelievable sense of calm, knowing that at that point it was in God's hands. But I prayed for very specific things. And I'll tell you, pretty much every one of those prayers was answered. And they were some pretty challenging prayers I was putting in God's hands. But he really did deliver for me and my family. And it just gives you that renewed faith in understanding that the power of prayer is something that you just cannot underestimate.
Powerful words from our friend Steve Scalise. And yesterday, Senate Republicans introduced a new tax reform proposal, calling it historic. With us now is Congressman Warren Davidson. He serves the 8th Congressional District of Ohio and also serves on the Financial Services Committee and also the House Freedom Caucus. Congressman Davidson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Nice to talk with you today.
Hey, thank you so much. Well, it's our understanding. Were you there today with our brother Steve?
I was on the floor, and it was an honor to be there. It was just so exciting to see him come in and really just see the reaction of all the other members of the House, truly bipartisan, to see the gallery full, the seats in the, you know, above the floor full. It was almost as full as the State of the Union. And then when I walked off of the floor, you saw the media gallery, and it was almost like it was for the State of the Union, just a lot of enthusiasm. And really, people standing behind Steve Scalise, but also behind the House of Representatives as a body, because people did realize that this was an attack on Steve Scalise, but because he was a Republican and because he was a member of the House and because it's so critical to the functioning of our government, it resonated around the world, was one of the points Steve Scalise made.
And it was good to see. It was powerful. I watched it on the news channel, and with all of the tension between the two parties, to see just a moment, if even a glimpse, it was good, and I'm sure it was meaningful for you to be there.
Absolutely.
Well, Congressman Davidson, the House Freedom Caucus, made up of the most conservative members of Congress, which you're a member, announced yesterday getting behind President Trump's tax plan. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts after getting a glimpse at it.
Well, the blueprint was really encouraging. One, just starting straight away, that you've got the House, especially the Senate, and the House leadership and the president all on the same sheet music in theory. And it was a loose framework. There's some details that are being filled in. But one of the other encouraging things is, as a business guy, I get there and I say, you know, just the way that we do collaboration is so different. You don't have, you know, like whiteboards where you go up and brainstorm and problem solve. And you look at how you would roll a product out in a manufacturing background, which I had. It's done differently. This was the closest, most collaborative thing to what you would see, you know, in a private sector where, let's say, you had a sales force of 240 salespeople that wanted to really understand a product and be able to go live and hit the streets and explain it to the prospective customers do a good job doing that. This was that kind of a rollout. And it was also a listening session where the Ways and Means Committee, House leadership, took some good notes, had some consistent feedback with some concerns, and I'm confident they're going to come back with some changes within the context of that framework, but it feels like a lot of progress from where we were with the healthcare rollout.
Well, like President Trump, you have a business background as well, and you bring that. Isn't that important, especially when it comes to tax reform, to have a business background where you can put on that hat and say, what does this look like as an employer, as a person that's been in business, and how does it impact those places that's going to generate jobs and revenue?
Oh, I think it's been incredibly helpful. You know, having signed both sides of the paycheck and done all the work that it's taken to scale a business, though obviously nowhere near the kind of business success Donald Trump had. But really scaling a business, going through all the process, knowing, you know, really firsthand all the sorts of complexities that we're talking about in the tax code, it's been very helpful. And with that eye, I'm incredibly encouraged by how strong of a pro-growth proposal this is. It's going to do good things for jobs, but it's also going to do great things for take-home pay for hardworking Americans across the spectrum. So I think it's going to be great for families.
Well, this is what we know so far. The lowest federal income tax bracket for individuals will sit at 12%, an increase from 10%, but will be offset by an expansion of the child tax credit, which a lot of people are glad to see that. And there will be three brackets total, down from 7. With the other two at 25 and 35. Is that right?
Well, I like to look at it as the lowest bracket is 0. And so fundamentally, I look at it as 4 brackets. And when you look at the number of people that pay 0, that bracket goes for the lowest wage earners. And that bracket is double the size it was before. So you double the standard deduction for individuals, and you double that standard deduction for families. So everyone, the first bracket you pay on your first dollar of earnings is 0. And so for everyone in the economy, the first $12,000 that you make is not taxed. And for couples, therefore, the first $24,000 is not taxed. And so, you know, that is a really big win for families. The other thing is, you know, that 12% number, you had a lot of criticism, a lot of feedback to say maybe it should have stayed at 10. How do you make that work? Because the reality is everyone pays some tax at that first rate above that if you make more than, you know, the 0 rate. So those are the kinds of things that we had dialogue about in the planning conference.
And the small business tax, you know, I know a lot of small business owners, that rate will drop to 25%. And this is what I found staggering, the lowest in America since the 1930s. I mean, what does that say?
Yeah, the trend since the 30s has not been good for taxation. Though I will say that one of the shocking stats on the individual rate, when McCarthyism was going on, that the Red Scare was there, the top tax rate was 90%. But there were just all these loopholes that have been added, all the deductions and exemptions, and that's the other big thing this year. Not only is it a win in terms of the tax rate for businesses and for families, it's a win in terms of simplicity. So the number of deductions, the complexity of the code is going the right way, fairer and simpler.
And I keep hearing rewriting tax regulations so Americans can complete their taxes on a single page. Okay, let's be honest, is that really possible?
Well, of course it's possible. I mean, there are places around the world that do it that way. What the goal is for this card that we've seen Ways and Means communicate for a while, and several of the presidential candidates a year ago in the primaries were holding up postcard size goals. And so the House Ways and Means Committee has come up with a plan that gets, 80 to 90% of taxpayers, individual payers, able to fill out just that one card. And part of the way they do that is by doubling the standard deduction. So you don't have to go through all the receipt collections and all the record keeping and all the forms that it takes to justify why you're going to get a deduction for this, that, and the other thing. It simplifies the code, and therefore you can just fill it out on a postcard.
And I'm sure you're disappointed, like a lot of folks, with health care and not being able to advance the ball. The House did its job. The Senate had a tougher time. Will passing tax reform be any easier for Republicans than repealing Obamacare?
Well, that's certainly the goal. And so starting with a better framework and a better product launch here, better rollout, I'm encouraged. If you would have asked me when I first got there or earlier this year, I would have said there's no way we're going to fail on this as a team. But one thing the House is unified in, we're really concerned about what's happening or rather what's not happening in the Senate. It wasn't easy to get to yes on our health care bill in the House. Frankly, it does far less than it should have, in my opinion. But we did pass one health care bill in the House, 416-7. So surely the Senate could agree to do that. It ends antitrust exemptions for health insurance companies. And so we're still rooting for the Senate. The fourth quarter's ours. Maybe we'll start chanting over there. We'll see the Senate win on health care and get the job done on taxes.
And we're just about out of time, but, the mainstream media, they just focus on things that aren't getting done. You all have gotten a lot done, actually, haven't you?
Well, the House has really moved along at a great clip. We've passed a number of things here, including a great reform to Dodd-Frank, including, a flood insurance bill today that just went over that would have increased the private sector flood insurance. And that'd mean a lot for places like Texas and Florida.
Yeah. Well, Congressman Warren Davidson of Ohio, thank you so much. We appreciate your service. You're one of our champions there. God bless you. Thank you for being on Washington Watch.
Thanks for
what
you do.
Well, next, we're going to continue this conversation on tax reform. Ramesh Ponnaru has written an informative article on National Review. We're going to talk about the child tax credit that's going to be expanded. That's important to a lot of folks. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and this is our Thursday edition of Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. And as Republicans have been unable to repeal Obamacare, they've turned their attention to tax reform. As we said earlier, Wednesday, Republicans outlined a once-in-a-generation tax overhaul that would slash rates, boost businesses, and double the amount of tax-free income. Everyone owing no income tax at all for some. And with us now is Ramesh Ponnaru. He's the senior editor of National Review, a columnist for Bloomberg View, and a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Ramesh, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, we've been reading your article at National Review entitled A Big But Fixable Problem with the GOP Tax Framework. Can it be improved? Let us know a little bit about what your thoughts are on that column and what your concerns are.
Sure. Well, I think that the Republican plan has some good elements, but there is a potential problem. They, tax reform is complicated. There are a lot of moving parts. There are two parts of their plan that cut taxes for middle-class families. There are two parts of them that raise taxes for middle-class families. And the question is it going to balance out in a way that cuts middle-class taxes? And the problem is that's not clear, because one of those pieces, one of the tax cuts in the plan, they haven't told us what it's going to be. They've said they're going to expand the tax credit for children, which is a great policy, but they just say by a significant amount. If they don't expand it enough because of the other parts of the plan, they're going to put middle-class families behind. They're going to actually raise middle-class families' taxes. That, I don't think, is what conservatives had in mind.
Well, we lost Ramesh. They were going to get back in touch there. And one of the things that is written, I would have vastly preferred if the framework had said that the child credit will increase by at least $1,000. And I think Republicans would be having a better rollout today if it had. Republicans have plenty of time to fix this problem, recognizing it and committing to solving it would be a good start. And that's an interesting perspective, because folks like those credits, those tax credits for their children. And also, there's a lot of folks out there that are taking care of their elderly. Ramesh, are you back with us?
I am. Sorry about that. So I was just trying to say that you could end up, if you don't expand the child credit enough, you could raise taxes on a lot of middle class families, and I don't think that's what conservatives elected Republicans to Washington D.C. for.
Hmm. Well, and I was just saying, you wrote,
"I would expand that child credit."
Well, and you wrote, "I would have vastly preferred if the framework had said that the child credit will increase by at least $1,000, right?"
That's right. Yes, per child, because
yeah.
the other problem with the way things are laid out in that tax plan, if there is a tax increase on middle class families, it'll be a higher one for bigger families. The more kids you have, the bigger a tax increase you're going to face. That just can't be something that good conservatives support.
And you also wrote, the proposal also doubles the standard deduction that most Americans take, increases the tax, the child tax credit by an unspecified amount, eliminates the alternative minimum tax, and gets rid of many itemized deductions, save for those for mortgage interest and charitable giving, as well as incentives for work, higher education, and retirement. So just unpack that a little bit. Folks are listening. They care about taxes, but some of this really gets in the weeds.
Well, you know, the Republicans want to get rid of a lot of the deductions, a lot of the tax breaks, so they can just have a lower rate. But some of those, like the deductions for mortgage interest and charitable giving, are pretty popular. So they're going to leave those in place. They're going to get rid of some of the other ones. One of the ones that they really want to get rid of is a deduction for state and local taxes. That's a tricky issue, because on the one hand, you've got people in these high-tax states like New Jersey or California, and, if they're paying these taxes, should they have to pay taxes on top of those taxes? That's one argument. On the other hand, if you're a low-tax state, should you basically be subsidizing people for being in a high-tax state? And most Republicans, that's the way they come down on this, and they want to get rid of that deduction.
Well, here's the big question. Can it get passed?
Well, I think that is a big question, and I think it's going to depend on how they fill in some of the details. I have a very hard time seeing a class tax increase passing through a Republican Congress and being signed into law by a Republican president. I just don't think there's going to be anything like the popular support they need to pass something like that. But if they do the right thing, if they offer tax relief for children and make it a real middle-class tax cut, then I think that they'll be able to get the vote.
And any Democrats? Do you see any Democrats coming on board?
That is going to be a heavy lift. You might be able to get a couple of them, but no more than that. I just think
that they're
polarized on these issues.
So some of the other issues are eliminate itemized deductions, eliminate state and local deductions, charitable deductions, they're not going to change. Retirement taxes will not be touched, and mortgage deductions will not change. And as we talked with Congressman Davidson just a moment ago, they all say this is going to be able to be put on one page. And I've been doing taxes a long time, and I hope I hope that can really be done.
You and me both.
Well, Ramesh, thank you so much for joining us here on Washington Watch. Appreciate your column. Appreciate your work. We look forward to having you back again on Washington Watch. Well, coming up next, we'll talk to one of our big fans, Dr. Alveda King. Her uncle was Martin Luther King, and I just love her to death. She's always got so much to say, so many good insights on topics of the day. She's going to chime in on the NFL and her uncle took a knee of a different kind. And then she's also going to share a little bit about the 40 days of life. We'll talk with her when we return. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We'll be back in just a moment.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Pleasure to be with you on this Thursday. Well, coming up, the Values Voters Summit is just around the corner, October 13th through the 15th. It's the premier conservative gathering of the year, an annual political conference held in Washington, D.C. for American social conservative activists and elected officials from across the United States. There's going to be training. The whole goal is to equip you who are in the trenches to do the battle, to know the issues. It's really important to know the issues and know how to stand your ground. Well, with us now is someone that knows the issues very well, Dr. Alveda King. Dr. King is one of the featured speakers at the Values Voters Summit. She is the director of the Civil Rights for the Unborn, the African American Outreach for Priests for Life, and niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Alveda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well,
did we lose you?
Can you hear me? No, you didn't. I just wanted to make sure you can hear me. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. You know, we just never know where you're going to be. You're always, it's like, where's Waldo? Where's Alveda?
That's the truth, honestly. Just kind of moving around quite a bit. It's been, it is an amazing journey. So I'm in Atlanta, though, right now. So, yeah.
Well, Alveda, you know, it's been an interesting few weeks, been an interesting few months, hasn't it? There's so much going on and lots of ebbs and flows in our culture. And, you know, do you feel like there's like emotional highs and lows and the stuff I'm seeing on the football fields? It just kind of breaks and hurts my spirit when I see this kind of angst going on. And I heard you say that your uncle took a knee for a different cause, didn't he?
My uncle, my dad, during the 1960s, and we kind of think that the taking the knee situation is new. It isn't. In the right now, in this time period, of course, we also had athletes taking the knee in the 1990s. In the 1960s, we had Martin Luther King Jr., my dad, Reverend A.D. King. During those civil rights demonstrations, they would often fall to one knee in protest, in prayer, taking a breather, redirecting energies and thoughts, all of that kind of thing. I think even in the Roman Empire, for example, or in other civilizations a long time ago, I think that they would actually do that sometimes too. So in this particular instance, right now, with President Donald Trump being very strong and forceful with the NFL interruption of the singing of the national anthem. You know, so we have our flag, we have our anthem, and to interrupt that at that time and make such a controversy, of course, he spoke against that. He did use some incredibly strong language, and I did mention to Neil Cavuto, I was on his show this week, and I said, well, you know, Neil, I've been called worse than that on Twitter and Facebook, and I have to forgive people. I love people, and I understand. I said, President Trump is draining the swamp, and he's stirring the pot. Now, I'm not making an excuse for the strong language, totally not doing that. But in the midst of my uncle would have called that creative tension. And when you create that tension, to deal with it nonviolently, then the conversation is moved forward. And we certainly want that conversation to keep going, because for people to pretend that racism is not a problem, that's not good, because racism is a problem, because we've not accepted that we're one human race, one blood, Acts 17:26. So as long as we think just because our skin is different colors that we're different races, we're sinning. So we need to have this conversation.
Yeah, and you've been around the president quite a bit, and I interviewed him during the campaign, and this rhetoric of him being a racist, and I agree, I think there's a lot of folks that wish he would have, just that one moment, would have choosed a different set of words, and the language, wasn't helpful. But this idea that he's a racist, I just don't see it, and I would imagine you don't either.
Either I'll say President Trump is not a racist, or I will say everyone is a racist. So it just depends on which perspective we want to take right now. As long as anyone who says my race needs to get along with your race is a racist, whether that's me of African-American descent or somebody of Celtic or Irish or Scottish or Asian or Native American, African, you know, if I'm saying my race needs to get along with your race, that's a racist statement, because there's only one human race, one blood. And if we can accept that, then then racism will go away, but we have to have that conversation. Now, do I personally think President Trump is a racist? I do not. But he's been called a racist. I'm sorry about that background noise. I'm outside. Somebody's playing with a motorcycle.
Are you on your motorcycle?
I'm not on my motorcycle, but there's a motorcycle and there are airplanes going over my head. So we have quite a bit of noise right here. So
let me ask, you're going to be speaking at the Values Voters Summit, Alveda, and what you have to bring is going to be important. One of the things that we heard yesterday from researcher George Barna is that there's a lot of Americans out there that are confused about abortion after all these years and all these decades. What do you have to say to, I mean, is there really room to be confusion? Either you know what you believe or you don't.
Well, we need to be more clear on telling people what abortion is. And abortion kills people, takes away their civil rights to live. And we've got to see about helping the mothers so we don't have the abortion.
Well, Dr. Alveda King, thank you so much for being with us on Washington Watch. We look forward to seeing you, God willing, in Washington, D.C. at the Values Voters Summit. Thank you so much. You're a champion of the faith. Well, don't go away. Coming up next, worshipers from all across the country will be in Washington, D.C. next week in prayer and praise. The event is called Awaken the Dawn. We'll talk with the event's founder, David Bradshaw, when we return. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, next week, worshipers from all across the nation are going to gather in Washington, D.C. It's entitled Awaken the Dawn. It's calling the nation to the National Mall in D.C. on October 6th through the 9th, Friday through Monday. And joining us now is the founder of Awaken the Dawn. Been looking forward to talking with David Bradshaw today. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, tell us about Awaken the Dawn. How did it happen? How did it evolve? Usually there's a pretty interesting story on these kind of events. It's no easy feat to put on this kind of magnitude of event.
Yeah, this has been many years in the making. I live here in Virginia, so I live in the Washington, D.C. area, so I've been to many events from the National Mall and in D.C. And so we, early on, a number of years ago, were just doing gatherings, primarily for young adults. And one year, we didn't have any venue to do the gathering in, and through just an unusual series of events, we ended up doing this gathering in a 5,000-person circus tent, just had thousands of young adults, and it was really worship and prayer and just a proclamation of the gospel. And this really started a catalytic process of probably 3 or 4 years where we really felt that God began to lead us very strongly and directly to invite America to the National Mall. And we're not just having one or two tents, but it's actually going to be 50 tents. Our current number actually is 58 tents. So it's one tent for every state, and the tents will be filled with worshipers, musicians, and prayer 24 hours a day. So this has literally never happened before in our nation's history. But it was a number of years of really wrestling with what God was inviting us to do, and also just God began to give confirmations to us probably 10 or 15 times. We really felt the Lord by the Holy Spirit leading us to do this.
So you're going to have these tents from all 50 states, and folks from those states are going to be in those tents. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, there's one tent for every state, and then we have about 8 regional tents. So there's 50 state tents and then 8 regional tents that will be all filled 24 hours a day. The regional tents are a little bigger, and so combined we'll see just hundreds and hundreds of worshipers and intercessors, as well as outreaches. We're going to be, you know, all over the city and just expressing the love of Christ. We really believe that this is a catalytic moment for a new Jesus movement. That's our heart. We just believe America is in a critical moment, and that God, this is one of the things, one of many things, that God has raised up right now because we urgently need a great awakening and a turning of our nation back to God. And so worship and prayer and the proclamation of the gospel are right there at the point of the spear to shift our nation. And so we believe that this is one of those catalytic moments, you know, that where thousands that are there in D.C. will be presented with the gospel. They'll encounter Jesus as thousands have gathered there on the National Mall. And yeah, we have almost every tent at this point is scheduled around the clock. So even in the middle of the night, there'll be people in these 58 tents worshiping and praying and asking God to pour out his spirit and really just honoring Jesus very publicly and very visibly.
Well, David, let me ask you, would you hang around here with us and take a few calls from our callers?
Sure.
That would be kind
sure.
of fun.
I'd be happy to.
Give us a call right now, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. What would you say, what is just pressing on your heart right now when you're going to come together next week? You know, there's been a lot going on, hasn't there, between the NFL and rioting in the streets and people protesting, and it seems like folks are just screaming to be heard. What's pressing it on your heart? And maybe we can hear from some folks that really feel some things that we need to go after God to in prayer as well.
Sure, yeah. For me, I think first and foremost, this is about the worth of Jesus. And, you know, this is a celebration. It's of Jesus' worth. I feel, you know, just the magnitude. It's sort of audacious to have 58 tents 24 hours a day with worship and prayer and gospel proclamation. It, again, it really hasn't happened before. But we believe every one of those tents is going to be a statement, a public, visible celebration of Jesus' reality, that he's alive and that he's worthy, ultimately worthy above all else. And then secondly, we believe we're on a rescue mission to a generation, to America, to a nation, that this is a critical moment. It is a crisis moment in many respects in terms of just the trajectory of our nation, morally, spiritually. And so we want to stand in the gap, and corporate national gatherings of prayer and worship are one of the premier ways God indicates that we can bring transformation and change to our nation. So first is the worth of Jesus and his beauty, and above all others, we want it to be public and bold and joyful, but it's also a rescue mission. We believe that America can turn, that change and transformation can come as the people of God pray and they come in unity together. And so that's what's going to happen during those 4 days. We will have thousands of people day and night around the clock worshiping, praying, and then we'll have some moments where we all come together. We'll have a bigger stage set up as well. And then the final day is a prayer gathering on October 9th, Columbus Day, for women to come together and really pray and believe God for this new Jesus movement, you know, this great awakening, and let their voices be heard before God and before the nation. So it's going to be a historic, very significant 4 days, we believe.
Well, give us a call here on Washington Watch, 866-372-7234. And of course, you know, David, we have the collective prayers for the nation, but then, you know, every state seems to have its own issues that they're grappling with and wrestling with. So, you know, I applaud this tent of meeting kind of concept. You know, I do a lot of study about our Jewish roots of the Christian faith, and there's a lot of imagery I saw when I saw that. Let's go to Tony in Tulsa. He wants to talk a bit about the problems with persuasions of racism. Tony in Tulsa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you for having me. Okay, so I constantly hear, let's say on the black radio stations where they use the N-word all the time. I mean, in song after song after song. If a person like me, I'm first generation American on my mom's side, second on my dad's, but yet since I'm a white person, I'm considered the black, male in every oppressed person's attitude. I'm the cause. If I was to get a flag and put it above the American flag, what that's doing is making the flag that I put up greater than the American flag. If I put up a Nigerian flag above the American flag, if I put up a British flag above the American flag, it's to accentuate that the flag that is up higher. One of the most racist things that I see is when people claim, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, David, how will you all be praying? I'm sure this will be on the minds of a lot of folks, and how will you address that?
Yeah, well, you know, we really do believe. I mean, Jesus prayed in John 17:21 that we would be one as he and the Father are one. And, you know, there are very real issues of racism in our nation. And there is a significant – this is one of the premier issues we're facing, certainly right now in America. And so we don't want to brush it aside, but we do want to say that there is a remedy to it. And God has given us, I believe, an invitation, not just at this gathering, but in this season, to stand up as the church and begin to love one another across the racial lines, across denominational lines, you know, and stand together, because we ultimately are one family, and not diminish our distinctives, but to really come together as one. And that's actually part of the primary reason for this gathering in the malls. We're saying, you know, everyone bring your offering of prayer and worship, love for God, proclamation of the gospel, and in some ways it's the gospel and it's God's presence that brings us together, and we become one when we're connected primarily to him. And so we're really contending for that. We're really believing that there is a remedy in God's heart for this crisis that we are facing right now, which is the ethnic racial tensions that have just always been under the surface, but have certainly in the last couple few years and even months and weeks have boiled to the surface of our nation. And so we're very much keyed in this particular gathering to the need for a remedy for that. And we firmly believe that worship and prayer is one of the absolute keys for that. In fact, I had a friend who lived in Ferguson, Missouri, a number of years ago. I'm sure most of the listeners will recall just the crisis that transpired there with rioting and the tension between the police and the African-American community, the whole thing as it was happening. And this dear friend of mine took a tent right in the middle of the city and erected this tent, and they just worshiped the Lord and prayed and loved people. And do you know what happened is many, many people gave their life to Christ, dramatically met the Lord. In fact, there was one moment where the city was on the verge of one of the key tension moments where there was police officers on one side and rioters on the other, and there was tension. Obvious, it was escalating. Mm. And these friends of mine, they had this tent of worship. They actually went right in the middle between the two groups, and they had some instruments, and they began to sing and pray. And do you know, in that moment, all of a sudden, the everything went peaceful. The whole situation in that particular moment calmed down, and it was a demonstration of what happens when the church is the church, the salt and light that we're actually called to be in these moments. And I believe that that's part of the spirit of why we're going small now.
That's wonderful. Listen, you've got our phones lit up here, so I don't want them to be here hanging. Let's go to Brenda in Missouri. Brenda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. And I just wanted to say, David, thank you. And I also will be praying for you all. And I also wanted to just ask, are you going to add a piece in there according to 2 Chronicles 7:14 about if my people repenting, that we would just stand in the gap and also repent for our states and repent for those in leadership who have chose the wrong way by not serving God and not allowing the Ten Commandments and the different things to change. As you do that, can we also repent for them so God will turn and actually hear even more of the prayer?
Yes, absolutely. We have a number of moments. First of all, the tense will be both worship and prayer, and repentance prayer will be mingled throughout the whole time, as really the heart of this is to return to the Lord with all of our hearts and to really allow God to be at the center of our national life. It's a step, it's a catalytic, you know, gathering towards that goal, that the Lord, that Jesus would be at the center of our nation. And then we will also have moments where we all come together in prayer in the spirit of 2 Chronicles 7, where we can all pray together. On the middle of the day on Saturday, there's going to be a gathering for pastors and leaders where they'll come together, and that's exactly the spirit of it. It's calling us to repentance and turn to the Lord and to really believe that God can and will respond when we turn to him with all our heart. So, yes, absolutely.
And David, we've got Chris in St. Louis, Missouri. He just wanted to encourage you. David, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for having me. I just wanted to say thank you for a number of things. First of all, thank you for bringing a good report in the news. So often we hear the bad reports and we hear all the things that are wrong. You know, it just reminds me of the 10 spies who went into the Promised Land and they brought back a bad report. You know, we can't, all the things that we cannot do and all the things that are wrong, but it was Joshua and Caleb who said, look, our God is greater. He's given us this. Let's go in and take it. And I just want to say thank you for that, and thank you that I just wholeheartedly affirm that it's only in the body of Christ that we can come together in unity, and there are no, there's only love and unity in the body of Christ. And just the prayer and worship, I just wholeheartedly affirm all that. Thank you for standing in truth, and it's awesome.
Yes, sir.
Well, Chris in St. Louis, thank you. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We're talking with David Bradshaw. He's the founder of Awaken the Dawn. It will be in Washington, D.C., October 6th through the 9th. You can find this information at frc.org. That's frc.org. And also you can follow Tony on Twitter at T. Perkins, at T. Perkins. I'm Russ Jones Speaks. And hey, what's your Twitter handle, David?
My Twitter handle is David_Bradshaw2. Sorry, that's too long, I know, but that's what I that's mine. And then
David,
you know, you can follow us at Awaken the Dawn 2017.
All right.
On Twitter.
Well, David, we wish you nothing but God's best at Awaken the Dawn, October 6th through the 9th. That's Awaken the Dawn, October 6th through the 9th. Go to frc.org. We've got all the information there for you to participate. David Bradshaw, thank you so much for being on Washington Watch. We appreciate it very much. We'll be watching closely to see how this event goes. Now, my friends, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord in Jeremiah 29:11. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. I'm Russ Jones. You've been listening to Washington Watch. God bless you.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.